So here's the title of my talk, and you can see the affiliation of a number of the co-investigators is indicated by the logos in the bottom of this slide. I have no financial commercial interest to disclose. It was funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research. And here you can see the authors of this presentation, and as indicated, they're from a variety of locations across Canada, including Samantha Coutier, who is a PhD student at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. It was a very energetic project, I think, and the people are from British Columbia, from Toronto, from Quebec City, and from Nova Scotia and elsewhere. So the aims were to collect and assess and disseminate up-to-date policy information to highlight some exemplary efforts and to work with stakeholders to support knowledge exchange activities in order to encourage a evidence-based approach to alcohol policy in Canada. So there's been growing evidence in the last few decades about what sort of interventions and strategies are effective in reducing harm from alcohol. And most of you in this room, if not all of you, know what they are. But then the big challenge is how come some jurisdictions are not doing it. So what we try to do is to try to figure out what's happening in the provincial, the provinces of Canada with regard to the exemplary alcohol policies. So we selected 10 policy dimensions and indicators, and I'll refer to them in a minute. And these were drawn from a review of the literature as indicated here. And we then developed a scoring rubric. We had 10 dimensions, over 75 indicators. We weighted them in terms of effectiveness and scope. We had them reviewed by 3 external international experts. And then we standardized data collection template and regulations. We then sent the data back to the provincial authorities and said, is this data accurate? You know, is this is our data for the pricing in your province that we're going to use. And they had an opportunity to look at it and say, yes, it's not accurate, or no, it's not accurate, and clarify that. In some cases, we had to use freedom of information to get to the data that we need, even though they should have provided it quickly, but they tried to drag their feet once in a while. The data was blinded by the project team members, and so they scored the data using our template, and the reliability checks were very high. And in a few cases, I had to settle some disputes between the scores, but in most cases, the scoring was very good. And then we calculated the weighted scores in terms of percentage of ideal, and then they were weighted in terms of scope and effectiveness. Now, I would like to point out, none of these policies that we proposed are unrealistic. We're not proposing unrealistic things. We're not proposing, you know, something that couldn't be done or hasn't been done in some cases, but we're trying to see to what extent the province measured up to what we consider to be appropriate policies. Now, here you can see how the effectiveness was weighted by the team. This is in the course of 2 face-to-face meetings, and then also scope. And scope basically refers to the reach. So what percentage of the population is likely to be impacted by a policy? Pricing, you can see we indicated 5 out of 5. Effectiveness, 4 out of 5. For in the bottom here, you see warning labels. Effectiveness was not scored very high, but it still had a wide scope. So we created a weighted score by combining effectiveness and scope of impact in order to weight the measures once we had collected and analyzed the data. Effectiveness was basically determined from our assessment of the literature, and similar to Thomas Baber et al., where effectiveness was measured by, did the policy have an impact on overall consumption? Did it have an impact on high-risk drinking? Did it have an impact on alcohol problems? So those are the 3 outcomes. We think knowledge is important, intention is important, but effectiveness for us was total consumption, high-risk drinking, or alcohol-related problems. So here's a map of Canada for those who aren't aware of how it looks. And you can see we are going to be presenting the results from West British Columbia to the East Nova Scotia. And I'm going to be presenting the results from the highest weighted policy first, moving down to the ones that are the lowest weighted. Pricing, we used three indicators: minimum pricing, percent pricing on alcohol content, indexation. Indexation refers to whether the price of average price of the alcoholic beverages were above or at or higher than the consumer price index, and whether there's some adjustment to the price to make sure that the price of alcohol was keeping above that. Pricing of alcohol content, for example, if you have a 9% beer, is it priced higher than a 4% beer? Is a 15% wine higher than a 7% wine? Is a 40% spirits higher than a 32% spirits? And then for minimum pricing, there's lots of literature in that recently. It's basically whether the province had a minimum price for on-premise beverages and off-premise beverages, on being bars and restaurants, off being liquor stores. So you can see that there was great variation in the provinces with regard to the ideal, and some provinces did not do very well, but the average is just above 50. So basically, on this very important variable, which was weighted the highest, the provinces are only hitting just over 50% of what they could be doing if they had the most precautionary pricing policy. Several areas of improvement are noted here. Some provinces sell below minimum prices. They delist products. They have ferment on-premise sales, which are about a third of the price of typical alcohol, and the average price is not keeping pace with CPI in a number of the provinces. Now, we also, in our reports, have also praised the provinces where they have exemplary policies. So we try to also indicate where their provinces are very good and also where they could be dramatically or substantially improved. The control system, the second variable, we looked at four indicators. What was the type of retail system? Was it a government-run system, retailing system, or was it private, or was it a mixture? What sort of sales channels were being used? Was there an emphasis on social responsibility in the websites of the liquor boards, or was it mainly about marketing? And did the ministry that was responsible for alcohol, did the liquor board report to a finance ministry, or did it report, let's say, to a health ministry? Well, none of them did, actually, but in some Nordic countries, that's the case, where you have the liquor agency reports to a ministry that looks after social welfare rather than in terms of finance. So you can see there's a great deal of range here as well. Around 40% of ideals indicated, and a number of the provinces could do a lot better than they have indicated as of end of 2012. Some areas of improvement here: there remains extensive manufacturer-sponsored product promotion in the liquor boards, and all the regions have alcohol sales beyond on-premise and off-premise sales, various other formats that are likely to lead to easier access. Physical availability, we used three indicators: the regulations pertaining to outlet density, actual outlet density on-premise and off-premise per capita, and the actual hours of operation. Here you can see that the scoring is indicated somewhat less, the average, for example, than pricing and type of control system, and a number of the provinces have pretty high physical availability. And all provinces allow for alcohol sales late at night and allow for extensive hours for significant community events. In Ontario, for example, when we have a film festival, the hours are typically changed to much longer than they usually are, or even during the World Cup, they had early opening hours of bars and restaurants. Drinking and driving policies, these were taken from Mothers Against Drunk Driving. The CEO of MAD Canada was on our project team, Andy Murray, and so we used their measure, which had been developed through research of the literature and assessments. We used licensing indicators, license suspensions and revocations, vehicle and remedial programs. And again, there's the provinces can do a lot better in that area as well, only about 30% of the ideal score, as indicated here. Most graduate licenses are not comprehensive, police enforcement powers are lacking, and few provinces have implemented zero tolerance laws for new or young drivers. Advertising and marketing policies. We looked at provincial marketing regulations, the enforcement of regulations, the focus of the Liquor Board's website. And you can see that some provinces did pretty good on that, but the focus of provincial Liquor Board website, in many cases, it was very much oriented. There are liquor control boards, but in many cases, the emphasis was very, very much on marketing and promotion of sales, and very little on social responsibility and so on. But there was some variation as well. So we felt that the greater restrictions on sponsorship are needed in Ontario, Nova Scotia, and PEI, permit manufacturers to donate money to corporate or brands identifying scholarships, bursaries, and scholastic prizes, pardon me. And as I indicated, their website does not really reflect their social responsibility mandate. Legal drinking age. The legal drinking age in Canada varies by province. It's 18 in Alberta, Manitoba, and Quebec, and it's 19 in the other provinces. We also looked at the supporting legislation and the enforcement of the legal drinking age on premise and off premise, and found that overall it was better than some of the other policy dimensions we looked at. But there's still room for improvement in this case. I'm going to run out of time soon, so I think that I'm going to just skip over some of these quickly. These screening beef intervention and referral, we had indicated as a priority in provincial strategy, whether there was a practice guidelines or a position paper, and last but not least, fee-for-service codes. By that I mean, did the province allow the physician to charge for his or her time when they delivered SPIR. That's the case for tobacco, for example. In many cases, if they provide tobacco cessation advice, they can charge for their time. That's not the case in many provinces for alcohol. And you can see that some cases we couldn't really find anything with regard to these three indicators, and some provinces did well, such as BC. Server training challenge and refusal, we looked at three indicators: whether the program was mandatory or voluntary, mandatory scored higher, the program quality, and program enforcement. And there was some pretty good programs in three provinces, and other provinces were falling behind with regard to this. One of the things we found difficult, we contacted the relevant authorities to find out whether they were evaluated. In many cases, they said they were evaluated, but they couldn't provide us with the evaluation report. So I think that there's a big hole with regard to this area. There needs to be much more rigorous evaluation of these programs and periodic updating and revising of these programs to be enhanced, to be more potent. This is an important dimension, because it really provides an umbrella, for moving forward. And we use the WHO Global Alcohol Strategy as a framework. And we looked at, did they have a provincial strategy? If it was a standalone provincial alcohol strategy, it was scored higher. If it was an alcohol strategy that was sort of buried in the bottom drawer of a mental health strategy, it didn't get scored that well. But if it had some components from the WHO alcohol strategy, it also scored better. So you can see that some provinces they are missing, other provinces they are doing better. Nova Scotia was a leader. They had a strategy a couple of years ago. Warning label science and policy scores, and you can see, do not very well at all, whether they're warning labels and signs and the quality of the messages, and there's lots of room for improvement in this area. The only jurisdiction that has warning labels on beverages is in one of the Northern Territories. The provinces do not have warning labels, but they have warning signs in some beverages and some premises. Pardon me. So here's the overall. They're very close together, not that far apart. Some provinces do somewhat better, and I'm going to run out of time. So the top ranking provinces are Ontario, British Columbia, and Nova Scotia. The average is 47. The top policy dimensions, in other words, those five with the highest potential for impact, fell below 60% of a perfect score. And the policies with the widest range were SPR and provincial alcohol policy, respectively. So to date, our findings have been used to inform policy reviews in at least five provinces. There's been provincial progress on a provincial strategy in Manitoba and Ontario. There's been some attempt to strengthen drinking and driving strategies in Alberta, Quebec, and Nova Scotia, and so on. So I think there has been some knowledge transfer. We wouldn't want to take credit for all of this, but I think they've been used to inform what's been happening since we initiated this project. And we would recommend to have five recommendations here. To standardize documentation, to enhance policy-relevant exchange. They often didn't know what the other provinces were doing on some of these things. To conduct impact assessment of existing policies and recommended policies, and to have more inter-sector planning, and encourage provinces to strengthen areas with the lowest scores. So the acknowledgements, as I indicated, are funding, primary funding, also where we got the data, MAD Canada, and some people who helped plan our dimensions and scoring, and people who were involved in knowledge exchange. And here's how you can contact me, and I can, those who want to have copies of the report, give me your cards later on. So thank you very much for your attention, and I think I will now, what do you think, one or two questions if there are any. Yes.
What would it take to get the SBIR, I guess, what would need to happen in order so that doctors could charge for that advice?
Well, you'd have to have a pretty strong movement within the province among the physician and nursing communities to make the case.
Okay.
that in the long run, I think it's going to save money. It's going to cost money to do it, but it's going to save money in the long run. And there have been some estimates that have been done. Jürgen Rehm, for example, has looked at what would be the cost savings. I think it needs to. It's a big challenge to make it higher priority, but I think there's some physicians, in the different provinces and the medical community that are interested in that.
Okay.